Hello and welcome to History by Hollywood, a podcast series examining the real events and people behind fact-based movies. This is episode 3 for Sunday the 26th of February 2017, and today's movie is The Sound of Music, directed by Robert Earl Wise and starring Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer in the lead roles. My name is Martin Darlington, and with me, as ever, is Andrew Blischick.
Hello. First up, some listener feedback. Friend of the show, Gary Shavit, wrote on our website comment section about our Rush episode. Great job, guys. I've been following F1 since I was a kid, long, long ago, and I can't fault anything you said. Don't worry, every fortnight is fine. Quality over quantity.
News. As outlined in the last show, we've realised the impossibility of attempting a weekly show. Even with movies we know, covering subjects with which we're familiar, to watch, research, write notes, record, edit and publish is just too big a task for a couple of guys with actual day jobs to also accomplish. So we're stretching to a fortnightly format, but hope to be able to keep improving the standard of what we produce by having that extra time.
And in case anyone is wondering about our intro and outro music, it's theme music from a 1970s TV show called The Adventures of Robinson Crusoe and was composed by Robert Mellon. It has since been covered by The Art of Noise, and we're using it for no other better reason than that Martin likes it and gets a bit of a nostalgia hit from hearing it every week. Every fortnight?
Yeah. Who said this is scripted? Just a quick word before we go on with the show. We've now got 25 followers on Twitter, which we're very proud of, and a couple of particular mentions. History Podcasting, whose Twitter address is at History Pod List, capital H at the beginning there. It's a site that, or a Twitter account that helps keep track of about 160 different history podcasts. They've followed us and have given us a link, which is really useful. And if you are looking for, you know, other history podcasts, that's certainly a good Twitter account to follow. And one of my favourites is Roman Emperor's Totalus Rancium Pod. Their Twitter address is at Totalus Rancium. And these are a couple of guys who are basically, they rate each Roman Emperor by how well he fought, how well he did, how long he lasted. I think it's a slightly tongue-in-cheek, but I'm sure very well-researched view of all the different emperors. They've got 53 episodes, and if you want to find their website, it is totalusrancium.podbean.com. Hi guys, that was our breaking news jingle, and one of the problems of pre-recording by a week or two is when we do have late breaking news and information, it's obviously a bit out of date, and we don't really want people to have to wait another 2 weeks before they get an acknowledgement. So I would like to say a huge thank you to Richard Darlington, otherwise known to me as Dad, who for his generous donation, and also to a good friend of ours, Steve Rasmussen. Steve's made a generous donation and made some very kind comments about the Gladiator episode on the website. Speaking of the website, we are getting a bit better at this, as promised, and if you go to the homepage, which is also the episodes page, near the bottom, you'll see some blue-coloured links to each post and each episode. If you click on Gladiator, you'll now see a link to Amazon.com's version or copy of John S. McHugh's biography of Commodus, The Emperor Commodus, God and Gladiator. Now, as we mentioned in the show, it's not exactly a page-turner, but if you do want to find out more about Commodus and the period of Roman imperial history, it is impeccably researched with a huge amount of detail. If you click on the Rush episode, you will see a link to the YouTube interview with Freddie Hunt did with Niki Lauda, and I can thoroughly recommend. That's 5.5 minutes of your life that you will feel, hopefully, was very worthily spent. So there's the breaking news, and now we're going to go back to the show and The Sound of Music.
Sing every song it hears.
And first up, the story of the movie itself. The Sound of Music is a 1965 film adapted from a successful Broadway musical of the same name, where the music and lyrics were written by Rodgers and Hammerstein. The musical in turn is based on the hit German 1958 movie, The Trapp Family, which again in turn is based on the 1949 autobiography by Maria von Trapp titled The Story of the Trapp Family Singers. The Sound of Music was directed by Robert Wise, who had just had recent Oscar success as the Best Director winner for 1961's West Side Story.
Set in Austria in the lead up to World War II, the movie was released to mixed critical reviews. However, it was a definite hit with the public and went on to win a slew of awards, including 5 Academy Awards, Best Picture and Best Director amongst them. Whilst it didn't launch the career of Julie Andrews, who'd already won an Oscar in 1964 for her role as Mary Poppins, and also had been a successful stage actor in the UK and on Broadway, it is arguably her most famous role.
The movie took the number one box office position a few weeks after its release and went on to become 1965's biggest grossing movie. By the end of 1966, it had become the highest grossing movie of all time in direct dollar terms and the third highest after adjusting for inflation. In the days before video streaming, DVDs or even VHS and Beta tapes, movies would have immediate re-releases and then re-releases, so they were in the cinema for years. At the end of its run, nearly 5 years after it first opened, The Sound of Music had grossed an incredible $286 million. That's about $1.8 billion in today's money. The Sound of Music's running time is a surprisingly long 2 hours and 54 minutes. It was filmed on site in and around Salzburg, Austria, and retains an impressive 86% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
So that $1.8 billion in today's money was just taken from the initial 5 years at the cinema?
Yeah, in today's money, yeah. And so you think about that since early 70s, you know, we've had all the extra releases of VHS tapes, Beta tapes, DVDs, streaming online. They've even remade this live as a musical event on one of the American networks last year, leading to more income for the franchise.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. So, the synopsis of the film. The Sound of Music opens with Maria, played by Julie Andrews, celebrating the spectacular views of the Austrian Alps by singing and spinning her way through the opening track, not surprisingly, the eponymous Sound of Music. Maria is a novice, a trainee nun in Salzburg, Austria, and has forgotten her pious duties to enjoy the beautiful countryside. Then she realises she's late for some form of prayer or duty at the abbey, rushes back, but gets caught by the head nun, the abbess, who together with her fellow nuns break into song, complaining, whatever are they going to do about rebellious Maria. Fate helps them out, though, when a local widower, George von Trapp, played by Christopher Plummer, needs yet another nanny to try to control his 7 rebellious children, and the Reverend Mother arranges for Maria to get the gig.
The 7 children, Liesel, Friedrich, Louisa, Kurt, Brigitte, Marta and Gretel, are strictly controlled by their submarine captain father when he's around, and they tend to play up terribly when he's not. Now that their father is absent on military business, the children reckon they can break Maria, as they have all their many previous governesses. But through a mixture of humour, patience, a little guile, and some of the most famous songs in modern history, Maria soon wins them over. Along the way, Maria crafts some play clothes for her and the kids out of some discarded curtains, takes them on a picnic, plays them the guitar, lets them climb trees, takes them canoeing, and most importantly, teaches them how to sing in one single lesson when she gets them to sing Do Re Mi.
When you know the notes to sing, you can sing most anything together. When you know
admit it. You were all singing along there, weren't you? Anyway, back to the synopsis.
Somewhere about here, we learn that the oldest, the daughter Liesl, has a love interest in town, the local telegram delivery boy, Rolf, which Maria agrees to keep secret from the captain. So by now, the fun-loving Maria has comprehensively won over the children.
The sour or dour sub-captain returns from Vienna with his love interest, Baroness Elsa, played by Eleanor Parker, and a camp friend, Max Detweller, or Uncle Max to the children, played by Richard Hayden. The captain is appalled by the undisciplined, fun-loving creatures his children have become, and dismisses Maria. Some last-minute songs and affection between the captain and his children start to melt his stern heart, and he agrees to let Maria stay. The film allows a few sparks of affection to then flare between the captain and Maria, but he decides instead to announce his engagement to the Baroness, much to the children's disappointment. After one or two more sparks between Maria and the captain, the Baroness confronts Maria and suggests she returns to her nunnery duties, and an embarrassed Maria scurries back to the abbey.
The children, unhappy with these developments, try to figure out a way to get Maria back into their lives, while the marriage plans rapidly proceed. But back at the abbey, Maria confesses her love of the captain to the head abbess, who advises Maria to follow her heart. Maria rushes back to the Von Trapp household, and the love between her and the captain is rekindled. When this becomes obvious to the Baroness,
she graciously departs the scene. All the time, Uncle Max, who's apparently some kind of talent scout, repeatedly moans and complains that he's still looking for the next breakout up-and-coming singing troupe for the flourishing Austrian folk singing circuit. Before we know it, Maria and George are married and embark on a honeymoon. On their return, they learn the Nazis have occupied Austria in what was known as the Anschluss and are putting their vile stamp on Austrian society. Uncle Max has by now found his next big thing for the Austrian folk scene, obviously the Von Trapp family singers, and against the captain's wishes, he enrolls them in the Salzburg Festival. Also about now, the captain learns he's been recalled to serve in the German Navy and must report for duty the next day. He informs the family that they need to leave Austria for good as soon as possible.
Some Nazi thugs intervene, sensing the captain may not be on board, and escort him to the Salzburg Festival. The family then perform their numbers and are a huge hit. Once backstage, they make a break for it and hide out in the abbey, where the nuns do their bit to stash the family and thwart the Nazis. Liesl's love interest, Rolf, reappears as part of the Nazi search party, and the family narrowly avoids him ratting them out. The next morning, the family drive to the Swiss border, where they hike their way across the Alps to freedom, singing one of the movie's many signature tunes. So, after 2 hours and 54 minutes, roll credits. So, now, the reality check. So, the bare basics of the story, Martin. How right did they get that? The captain and his family in Salzburg?
Well, it's funny. When I mentioned to some friends that we were doing this, somebody said, oh, yeah, well, obviously, he couldn't have been a naval captain because Austria's landlocked.
Yeah.
Whereas, of course, in the First World War, he was part of the Austro-Hungarian Navy, which did indeed have ports, and he was a submarine captain, highly decorated. He was the Austro-Hungarian Navy's most successful submarine captain. He commanded U-5, and he was married to a lady called Agatha. She died of scarlet fever in 1922, but they had seven children.
As the film has.
But strangely, the film, in descending order, names them as Liesl, Friedrich, Louisa, Kurt, Brigitte, Marta, and Gretel. In reality, they were Rupert, Agatha, Maria, Werner, Hedwig, Johanna, and Martina. Why they've changed the names, we're not quite sure.
They've got the same number of gender, right? The same number of boys and girls in both fictional and real, so they could easily have used the real names.
Yeah, I can understand they wouldn't want a child Maria and Julie Andrews' character, I suppose.
That might be it.
But maybe one of the big things is George, or Georg, unlike the movie's depiction of him as a cold disciplinarian and aloof father, was quite the opposite. He encouraged the children to play and sing and play instruments, and his children's memoirs all remember him as a warm, loving man.
Yeah, and in the movie, when they were filming the movie, apparently, some of the Von Trapp family members were there, including Maria herself, and they were not happy at all with the portrayal of the Georg as cold, because of their memories of the exact opposite, and they tried to influence it, the softening of the image, but without success.
Yeah, unfortunately, they'd signed away their rights to the story much earlier, which we'll come to shortly. Georg's daughter Maria became quite ill during 1926, and he requested a tutor from a local abbey, and they sent a postulate, which is a pre-novice nun, and her name was Maria Augusta Kuchera.
So the basics of the story, they got a fair bit of it right. In fact, the one thing everybody thinks they got wrong, that he was a captain in the Austrian Navy, they got that right. Plus long deceased and wife and seven kids, and someone from the abbey comes to look after the kids, and her name is Maria. All that is fact.
Yeah, the only difference is she was brought purely to be a tutor for Maria, the third eldest child, while she was ill. There was another governess there, and apparently she was the one who used the whistle, and her name is Fräulein Freckmann. She was the one who lined them up and marched them about, and Maria didn't particularly like it.
Okay, so what do we know about Maria, the real Maria Augusta Kuchera?
Well, she had her own interesting backstory. She was born on a train on the way to hospital, but her mother died when she was three, her father died when she was seven, leaving her to be brought up by a strict uncle against whom she repeatedly rebelled. And in her own words, she was a wild child into her teens until she found God and decided to become a nun, the first stage of which meant becoming a postulate.
So again, a little bit right, you know, the fact that the song How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria indicates she's rebellious. She kind of got that in from the autobiography, I guess. It made its way into the movie with some degree of accuracy. So she's in the household now, and a much younger Maria is in the captain's home, and eventually ends up falling in love with all the children and gets them involved in all sorts of games and songs, just like in the movie.
But the captain, or Baron Georg, soon proposed to Maria. Now, she was 22 and he was 47. And don't forget, this was 1927 by now. So, a long time before the scenes depicted in the movie, which compresses that time quite considerably. Maria von Trapp has since said that she liked the captain but didn't love him. Yet she loved the children and accepted his proposal, and in time grew to love him more than anyone before or since.
And something the film obviously doesn't mention, but Maria and Georg went on to have three more children, Rosemary, Eleanor and Johannes.
Johannes we'll come back to a little bit later. Interesting character.
The family loses all their savings when an Austrian bank fails. They rent rooms in a manor house and are making ends meet when they meet a visiting priest, Reverend Franz Wasner, who hears them sing and encourages the family to enter singing competitions, the first of which they won.
Yeah,
so this is,
this is Uncle Max,
or as close as the movie gets to Uncle Max.
But why they decided to make it Uncle Max and not a Reverend Franz Wasner, who was to go on to be their musical director for 20 years, but he's been written out of the film completely.
He was in the German one. I kept him in for the original German 1950-something movie, The Trapp Family.
The 55 movie, yeah. They were also heard by a famous Austrian soprano, Letta Lehmann. She encouraged them further, and they became a popular touring act during the mid to late 30s. Then, of course, we had the Anschluss. Hitler and Nazis annexed Austria in March 1938, and the Von Trapps had already been booked on a singing tour of Italy. So in the September of that year, they packed up their belongings. Now, Georg had received an invitation. I think an invitation from the Nazis was like a three-line whip in the House of Parliament. An invitation to join their navy as a submarine captain. And he refused, which at that stage he was still able to do. So in September of 38, they packed up their belongings and they simply walked across the road, got on a train, went to Italy, completed their singing tour. But they knew, I've read Agatha von Trapp, the second eldest daughter of the original Agatha and Georg, I've read her book, and Maria von Trapp, as in Mother Maria, her book, and they both say they knew they weren't going back to Austria.
Yeah, so that key moment of the scene, the where the movie ends and they're walking, singing happily off to freedom, that never really happened because they went for a walk of about 500 yards to their nearby railway station.
Yep.
And they're on their way to Italy and eventually America.
Yeah, and the house they left behind in Austria was, by apropos of nothing really, was requisitioned as the headquarters of Heinrich Himmler, head of the SS and Gestapo. But they went off to Italy. They then went to England, boarded ship, went to America,
and got processed at Ellis Island. And Maria, there's, I don't know whether it's urban myth, but is somewhere in the records they say, when they say how long are you coming to America for, she said hopefully forever.
Yeah,
which would have raised the hackles of the immigration officials. Turned out to be true.
But of course, they, having lost their savings, they arrived pretty penniless and continued to make their living by singing. Their booking agent changed their name from the Trapp Family Choir to the Trapp Family Singers, thinking the former was a bit too churchy.
And you mentioned somewhere along the way they dropped the Von. They were the Von Trapp Family something or other, and I'm not sure whether it was initially when they got to the US they dropped the Von, but they definitely dropped the Von at some stage to make them appear less Germanic, obviously.
So we went through the war, they were settling in America, and most of the family applied for American citizenship. Rupert and Verna actually served in the US Army towards the end of the Second World War, so not all the children at home. But sadly, in 1947, Georg von Trapp died of, we believe, lung cancer, and leaving Maria to bring up the remaining children who hadn't already left home. So to make some money, she wrote her memoirs. This became a bestseller, alerted the growing movie industry to a possible storyline.
You said previously that the Uncle Max / Reverend character, the real-life singing mentor, was with them for 20 years after they first got together. Which means, if you haven't figured it out, listeners, he came with them on the boat across to America and migrated at the same time, apparently, and stayed with them as they toured.
Agatha says in her book that he was referred to as uncle. Not, he wasn't a blood relative, but in the way that a lot of uncle cultures Max will have, an adoptive uncle, and he was very much part of the family. And she said he was a wonderful man. He used their talent for their interests more than his. You know, he never exploited them, and he was always there for them. And she says it's just a shame that he hasn't received the recognition she feels he deserves.
So back to them trying to survive in America. Maria writes her memoirs and they become a bestseller. Yeah.
It was a best-selling book, and some German film producers approached them for the rights to the story. And they were making ends meet, but only just, and it must have been what seemed like a fairly substantial sum. So the family signed away their rights to the story. The German producers made Die Trapp Familie in 1956 and a sequel in 1958, Die Trapp Familie in America, spelt with a K, obviously. And although Maria tried to change some elements of the story, particularly, as we mentioned earlier, the portrayal of her late husband Georg, she was unsuccessful, and this frustration continued through the later American versions of the story.
So a Broadway musical opens, The Sound of Music, in 1959 by stage producer Vincent Donoghue, thinking the role of Maria would be perfect for his friend, the young singer Mary Martin. The songs became all original, written by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein in their last musical collaboration.
In 1965, 20th Century Fox released the movie version, starring Julie Andrews as Maria and Christopher Plummer as Captain Georg von Trapp. A huge and continuing worldwide success, the family have received virtually no direct profit from the film.
No direct benefit, but you've already mentioned that there's been various autobiographies mentioning their time on the movie and subsequent tours around America. And that recognising their potential to trade off their fame, the family bought a farm in Stowe, Vermont, where they then held singing camps when they were not touring, but then finally broke up as a singing group in 1957. Maria, who remained very pious and religious her whole life, took three of her children and went to become missionaries in Papua New Guinea after that.
Yeah, in 65, the same year the movie was released, Maria returned to manage the Fontrap family lodge, and eventually she died in 1987, aged 82. But if you go on YouTube, you'll see a number of occasions where she met Julie Andrews, yeah. Especially. She was on the Julie Andrews show. They sang together.
They yodeled together.
I think before we sort of close out on Maria, what's interesting is she says herself, so Julie Andrews played a wonderful part, and the character she portrays is a lovely, sweet young girl. Said, that wasn't me at all. Mm. The children all agree she was a very strong...
matriarch. Yeah.
Yeah, very matriarch. Not a bully, not a disciplinarian, but she had a very... She was very driven, and she had... A couple of the kids said, when mother decided something, we basically learned to just go along, because you're not going to change her mind. Remarkable lady, really remarkable lady.
The lodge in Stowe, Vermont, is still there. Her son, Maria's son, Johannes, ran the lodge and is now run by Johannes' own son, Sam. If you visit the lodge, you can stay there. They have restaurants. You can go skiing in Vermont. They offer something called maple sugaring, whatever that is. They even brew their own beer in both German and Austrian styles, if you're interested.
There's a BBC interview which was made in 2015 with Johannes Fontrap, the youngest of Maria and Georg's children. And I think he comes up with the best summary of the contrast between the movie and their real lives. And he said, you have to remember, I quote, this was a Hollywood version of the Broadway version of the German film version of my mother's book, end quote. I think that's a lovely way of putting it. I mean, he says in that interview that all the children and his mother at various stages of their lives struggled with the portrayal of the family, but learned to accept it. Mm. As he said, it. So many people have said that they felt inspired by the film, or they just thoroughly enjoyed the film. And he said, no, that's part of my professional life and my private life. I know, and the people that matter know, you know, what the truth is.
Okay, so how do we summarise all of this?
Well, I mean, the film did diverge from reality quite significantly.
And we've always said, though, that we're not going to really deduct points for minor variations that definitely improve the narrative.
but there's a lot. I think there's a lot of difference. I think this is one of those where it should be inspired by true events or inspired by a true story. However, we do have to say this film remains one of Hollywood's most enduring successes. It definitely deserves its place in movie history. And it's shown pretty much once a year on British television, certainly.
Yeah, and there was that whole phenomenon. I don't know if you got it, dress up and go and sing along.
Yeah, I went there in Bristol about 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all dressed up and they show the film and then pause it and you have to do actions. And yeah. It was great fun. Yeah.
So it's, you know, got a... It won't die. It'll never die, this movie.
No. Interestingly, though, when you were researching the background to the film itself, you did notice there's one country where it's really noticed.
Yeah. You can see there are lots and lots of tourists that go to Salzburg specifically because of this film, perhaps millions a year from all over the world. But it's only very recently that the good citizens of Salzburg have decided to embrace this movie openly, and there is now a production you can go and see as a tourist. And there obviously are bus tours that will take you to the various Salzburg destinations. But as I say, it's only very recently, even to this day, I think if your average Salzburger would not know of the movie.
No.
And there's probably a very good reason for that.
Yeah. We are surmising that...
It was not a hit in Austria.
Because they ran away from the Anschluss, whereas most Austrians embraced it.
Yeah.
And I think the national feeling, which they're very embarrassed to admit now, was they felt they were going to ride the wave of German success on the coattails of Hitler and the Nazis.
A plucky family walking their way to freedom just kind of reminds the rest of the population that they were more complicit with the Nazis.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay,
I suppose we get to marks out of 10. Mm-hmm. entertaining. I've got to give it an 8. I can't give it lower than 8. And as our previous discussions about painting selves into corners, I can't quite go for a 9.
Mm.
It is a romantic musical, which is not necessarily my first genre of choice. So, but it's such a hugely important film in most children's upbringing. I'm going to say, 8 for entertainment.
Well, for me, I mean, when I watched the movie recently in preparation for this conversation, it really must be over, must be 30 years plus since I watched the movie. So I had this clear image in my head that it was saccharine sweet and completely, you know, naff, and I wouldn't like it at all, and I would find it would have dated since I last saw it, all of which I must say was wrong. It stood up pretty well, and as entertainment it was quite the delightful movie, and so I was pleasantly surprised. My memory of it wasn't doing it was doing it a disservice, and I quite enjoyed it, so I go with 8 as well, Martin.
Okie doke. Historical accuracy, the compression of the time, and the portrayal of Georg, and the writing out of Reverend Franz Wassner, and the children, the missing children, and the change. I can't give it more than 4. Yeah.
Mm.
But then it's a musical, and it's not trying to portray itself as a historical record. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, I mean, I would have thought initially history value for a light musical, I'll give it 2 or something. But on reflection, they did get some things right and mysteriously just ignored other things or changed them. So I think I'd agree. 4 for me as well. It's historically accurate.
That's pretty good, though. So they're getting 16 out of 20, or an average of 8 for entertainment and 4 for history. So well done, Robert Earl Wise, Julie Andrews, Christopher Plummer, but especially well done to Maria von Trapp and the children. Timeless film. So looking forward to a fortnight's time, which will be Sunday the 12th of March.
Yeah.
We will be going back to Swords and Sandals with Zack Snyder's 2006 almost comic strip film 300, covering the events at the Battle of Thermopylae in 480 BC between the Spartans and their allies and the Persians, starring Gerard Butler as King Leonidas. So that's something for us to look forward to.
Indeed.
Yeah, and Andrew and I are going to have to watch the movie, which is, as a fan and student of history, is quite painful. so maybe expect to be underwhelmed. Or expect us to be underwhelmed.
Yeah.
So for this week, in tribute to Maria and Gil von Trapp and the 10 children and the impact this film's had, I think we'll go out with a different outro. So all that remains is for us to say so long.
Farewell.
So long, farewell, I'll be to say goodnight.
I hate to go and leave this pretty sight.
Sigh and say goodbye.